did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
The media. Every one of them brought us up.
This is Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner GAA podcast.
Hello there and welcome to Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner GAA podcast. Well, the mercury may be falling, but county championship nationwide are coming to the boil with semi-finals and finals dominating the weekend schedule in both hurling and football. Our reporters were out in force this weekend and over the next half hour or so, we will hear their thoughts and those of various managers. Our first port of call is Páirc Uí Chaoimh in Cork, where Dennis Hurley watched the County Senior Football Championship semi-final action. Dennis, you were in action for the first game, Castlehaven v Duhallow, a 15-point apiece draw. An unlikely result with about 10 minutes remaining?
An unlikely result with about, I'd say, 6 minutes of normal time remaining. It looked to be done and dusted. Duhallow were up 15-8 and Castlehaven were down to 14 men. And somehow Castlehaven got 7 points in a row. They came back without needing or managing to get a goal. They did it with points. And it really was kind of strange at the end. It was as if they had won and Duhallow had lost, when really it's just back to square one for next week. But you'd wonder, will it have a psychological effect on the mindsets ahead of the replay now?
The classic question in these cases, was it a case of brilliance by Castlehaven or Duhallow dropping?
Well, we asked Padraig Curran, the Duhallow manager, that afterwards, and he said that there is a natural tendency, I suppose, to sit back, and that brings the team on you a bit more. Castlehaven definitely did throw a bit more caution to the wind because they just weren't themselves for the opening 50 minutes of the game. They had Brian and Michael Hurley inside and they were isolated. They weren't getting enough ball. I think they only scored about 3 points between them, whereas Mark Collins, I think, had 9 out of the 15. There's definitely plenty of room for improvement with them. Their manager, Liam Collins, was asked what areas they could improve on, and he just straight up said all of them. So they definitely have room for improvement. But at the same time, Duhallow brought on Anthony O'Connor I think, just before half time, and he's a very valuable attacker for them, and he'd missed all of the year. It was his first championship football for them this year, so he will be a big addition if he is available from the start next week.
Do you think that there was a bit of a hangover for the Haven after beating Nemo in the quarterfinal?
I suppose you could say that looking at it, but you know, it's hard to know. Like they'll say themselves that, I suppose, that they trained well for the 2 weeks and that they had resolved to put it behind them. But maybe it is just a natural tendency to think we've taken out the champions. Mm-hmm. You know, no one can stop us. But they have certainly had the shock needed. It's their second draw of the championship. They drew with CIT about 6 weeks ago, and they won the replay of that before beating Nemo, so they've been living on their wits a bit, but they're still standing.
That was the first game of a doubleheader yesterday in Páirc Uí Chaoimh. Would you say it was a good advertisement for Cork football?
I don't think either game was really. Across the two games, you had, 57 points, I think, and no goals. And very few goal chances. Even Castlehaven had one chance in the first half, and it would have been a brilliant goal if it had gone in, a ball over the top, and Roland Welton raced onto it, and he tried to cushion a side-footed soccer effort over Patrick Doyle, the goalkeeper, and it just came back off the crossbar. But beyond that, chances were very rare in either of the two games. Brian Hurley had one chance, half chance, blocked down when Castlehaven were trying to reel in the lead, and other than that, they were thin on the ground. It was kind of it was, I suppose the teams would say, it was winning football, you know. Mm-hmm. Doing what they can to get the win rather than it being open, flowing football.
And what sort of crowd was there, as a matter of interest?
I'm not sure that there wasn't one announced. Both stands were open, but the north stand, the old uncovered stand, was very sparsely filled. And the top tier of the south stand was only open to the media, so I wouldn't think there'd have been more than 5,000 there anyway.
Okay, so the second game of the day then was St Finbarr's v Carbery Rangers, 15 points to 12. The Bars winning that one. The proverbial performance of two halves.
Absolutely. And if you were to kind of use one player as a touchstone for symbolising it, you'd say Stephen Sherlock. He had a first half to forget. He tried a good few shots and they didn't come off. And then in the second half, he just had his sights in and he finished with 10 points. Ray Keane, the Bears manager, said afterwards that they would be giving him gentle encouragement sometimes to work on his conversion rate, and his response is, if he doesn't shoot, he doesn't score. So he was proven right yesterday anyway. But Cabo Rangers will be very, very disappointed with how it went. Micheál O'Sullivan Hawley, their manager, he said afterwards that it was just a collapse, and that at half time it was drummed into the players very forcefully that it was back at 0-0 and not to take their lead for granted. But St. Finn Bears just totally got on top of midfield, and they just ate into it point by point. And once they got in front, there wasn't really any sense that they were going to lose it. It's a funny thing, actually. It's the fourth time that the sides have played in the semi-final since 2010, and the Bears have won all four of them now.
Bars, of course, contested the final last year. In terms of the 2018 model, are they an improved side? Do you think that they've learned some valuable lessons from last year's defeat?
I think they have learned some valuable lessons. It's hard to know yet whether they're an improved side. They probably have the potential to be, but they haven't fired fully in this championship yet, which, as a manager, is probably a good way to go into a final. The one thing is they'll have 3 weeks to prepare now, whereas the winners of the replay next week will have had an extra game and a 2 week break, which might be a bit more optimal, but that's something that we look at afterwards. And, you know, whoever wins their break was the best break to have. But the Bears they're motoring nicely. The first half was poor, but they stayed enough in touch that it didn't have to be an obstacle that they couldn't overcome. Sherlock can provide a lot of scores on his day. Killian Myers-Murray only came on very late because he had been ill, so he's another guy who can shoulder the scoring burden. Michael Shields is a very savvy operator at centre forward, and Ian Maguire is, he's as good as anyone at midfield.
Want to mention as well a very famous surname in goals for St. Finn Bars yesterday.
Absolutely, John Curran's Jr. Yeah, he came on in the quarter final against Douglas when Declan Murphy, the regular goalkeeper, had to go off injured. And John kind of hadn't been, he was involved with the team last year, but more in a backroom role. He wasn't part of the playing panel, but he has talked out again and kept clean sheet against Douglas, I think, and a clean sheet yesterday. So if they do go all the way, and you're looking down the roll of honour of Bears county title winning teams, you'll have Jay Kearns and Jay Kearns bridging the gap between this team and the one back to 1985.
Now we're going to turn our attention to Mayo Senior Football Championship semi-final action at the weekend. Mike Finnerty was a very busy man with extra time thrown in on Saturday night. Mike, before we get on to the weekend games, want to talk about an interview with James Horn over the weekend. Some interesting things to say about the mindset in Mayo as he prepares for his comeback.
Yeah, that's right, Colm. He spoke exclusively to Mayo GA TV on Saturday night, and I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of James on that particular channel in the months ahead. I gather that it's a line he's looking to go down, that he'll communicate to the outside world and to the Mayo supporters via the Mayo GA platforms. And I'm not quite sure if it's going to rival Arsenal TV or Chelsea TV, but it looks like the GAA is moving in that direction. But on Saturday night, he certainly set his stall out in terms of, as he called it, his mantra and the team's mantra over the next 4 years. And that is that he's not interested in talking about quests or adventures or odysseys. As he said himself, that's all a bit too mythical and romantic for his liking. He prefers to measure improvement in training sessions, focus and concentrate on coaching, making players better, trying to improve them individually and the collective group. And he wrapped up by saying, when I asked him about Mayo's prospects of winning Connacht Championships, making Super 8s, winning an All-Ireland. He said, we're really looking forward to the first round of the National League against Roscommon. So I think James Horan is, you're going to hear a lot more of James Horan bringing it right back to basics over the next few months and years.
What is the feeling on the ground, Mike, in terms of James Horan's appointment for the second time? Is it a case of going back to the past, or that he is a voice that has brought them so close in the past, and who's to say that he won't bring them that extra step in this term?
I think once James Horan put his name into the arena for the job, I think there was a huge groundswell of support for him among Mayo supporters and across the executive committee of the Mayo County Board as well. He obviously turned the county's fortunes around when he came in at the start of 2011. Four Connacht Championship titles, two All-Ireland final appearances, an All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry, which went to a replay in 2014. So his track record, very, very impressive. And he's always stayed very visible as well since he stepped down as Mayo manager, between his work as a pundit on TV, his newspaper columns, his radio work, and indeed his coaching and management as well. He's been working with Westport for the last 8 or 9 months and managing their senior club team. So James had a very high profile, he had a very strong track record, and to all intents and purposes, he essentially built this team, this current squad. His fingerprints are all over it. And I think broadly, his return has been welcomed. No point in saying otherwise. A few eyebrows raised definitely at the backroom team. Certainly wouldn't have predicted the selectors and trainers he's brought in. But the more we find out about what he intends to do, the more sense it seems to make. Because again, during that interview on Saturday night, he just explained in a little bit more detail about the fact that he is essentially going to be the head coach of the Mayo senior football team over the next 3 to 4 years, as well as being the team manager. He's going to be a tracksuit manager. He made the point he has to go out and buy a pair of football boots this week, because he's going to be spending a lot of time on the training field, and then he will have various different selectors, come trainers, come coaches, feeding in to the work they do on the training ground. And he also made the point that he intends to add one or two more to his backroom team over the coming months, but made the point as well that he's in no particular hurry to do so.
Very
quick. The fact he didn't rule out Kieran McDonald being one of those one or two would certainly lead a lot of us to think that he has reached out to Kieran McDonald. Kieran is, I would imagine, mulling it over, and if he decides to come in, that will certainly... That will certainly give us all something to write about and talk about over the next 12 months as well.
Very quickly, what would James have taken from the weekend's club championship action?
I don't think he'll have learned a whole lot that he didn't know already, if I'm being honest. The county players, by and large, all stood out from the crowd. Some of the players that were in Stephen Rochford's development panel during the course of the season, in particular Matthew Ruan, would have caught the eye. He's a young, brave midfielder that a lot of people would imagine will get some game time in the new year. The Brafey Ballyhadreen game was a much more old-fashioned, entertaining game of football. Brafey posted Aidan O'Shea at full forward and let the ball into him, and that obviously led to a lot of drama, a lot of goal-mouth excitement. The Castlebar Mitchell's Ballintubber game, a lot more tactical, a lot more defence-orientated, and it became a sort of a war of attrition and a very strategic sort of a contest, but compelling in its own way. And obviously they have to meet again next weekend.
One more game from the weekend that caught my eye, Mike, and that was Cross Malina down to intermediate ranks. Some drop from their All-Ireland club title, what, 17 years ago?
That's right, yeah, absolutely incredible to think that 17 years ago they were All-Ireland club champions, 15 years ago played in an All-Ireland club final, lost to Nemo Rangers, and such a proud club with such a great history and such a great tradition to have fallen on hard times like this. I mean, it's been a disastrous year for them. I saw a stat floating around on WhatsApp groups over the weekend. They played 32 matches this season, that Cross Malina senior team, in all competitions. They drew 2 and lost 30. They were relegated in Division 1 of the Senior League down to Division 2. As you said, dropped down to intermediate championship at the weekend after losing to Davitt's. And it really is a shame. The last remaining link, actually, with the 2001 All-Ireland winning team from this weekend was Pather Gardner. Pather, he's approaching 40 at a rate of knots. He continued to play with the Deal Rovers over the years, and I'm sure nobody will have been more heartbroken on Saturday evening than Pather Gardner, a guy who represented Mayo with such distinction, a guy who was exceptional high standards, demands huge standards of himself and of his teammates. He will be absolutely distraught this week at the prospect of Cross Malina going to intermediate. But then on the flip side, Davitt celebrate, and the fact that it was the legend himself, Mickey Conroy, the former Mayo forward, who hasn't played a game of football all season. He's been really crippled with a serious Achilles injury. But somehow they managed to put him back together for one last roll of the dice, brought him off the bench on Saturday. And he hits the last 2 points of the game, including the winner that keeps Davitt's in senior football. And the tweet he sent out on Saturday night, I think, sums up Mickey Conroy when he just floated it that he heard James Horan is planning to organise trials for the Mayo senior football team. So I think he issued a come and get me plea to James Horan, looking for another shot.
Now we're going to turn our attention to action in Tipperary, and in the battle of the towns in the Premier County, Nina Éire Óg ended the four-year reign of Thurles Sars. A little earlier this morning, Larry Ryan spoke to Tipperary and Nina legend Michael Cleary, who played on Nina's only other senior county championship winning side way back in 1995.
So Michael, Nina back in the county final again. What was it like yesterday against Thurles? After the best possible start, I believe, at a coffee goal.
Yeah, I think we had 1-3 on the board after 5 minutes, 4 or 5 minutes. I know just from talking to the lads, Thurles have been notable over the last 5 or 6 years by their fast starts. And I go back to the 2015 county final, I think they were 11 points up after 12 minutes. So I know Nina were very conscious of, number one, not letting Thurles get a fast start. But number two, then, they were conscious, obviously, of getting the start themselves, you know. So, it was great. It gave Nina a lot of heart, and obviously the supporters that were there. And I don't think Nina at any point ever lost yesterday, or were ahead right from the start yesterday. And they started as they mean to go on, and apart from a little lull, maybe within the last 7 or 8 minutes, and then they finished very strong again. I'd say for, like, the game was 66 minutes yesterday. Then Nina would have been very happy with 60 minutes or 55, 60 minutes of their performance.
Who were the outstanding players? Yesterday, Michael Heffernan scored well. The lads around the tip panel, I suppose, were still the main men, were they? Who were the stars on the day? Jake Morris had a few points.
Yeah, I suppose Mikey was a standout player yesterday, as he has been for many years now. He's one of the standout players in Tipperary. I'd say number two yesterday was Pierce Morris, actually, Jake's brother. He was exceptionally good midfield. There was a lot of good performances. I'll name Darragh Quinn, Conor McCarthy, Conor Ryan, Tommy Heffernan, Killian Leeson. Like, Nina had a lot of good performances. And, you know, for a club, it's like any team trying to make a breakthrough, a lot of players have to play well, whereas the champions or the established team can get away with a few less. But Nina had been so close over the recent number of years, they need kind of double-digit numbers playing well.
Yeah.
And they've got that for the last couple of Sundays.
And as you say, like Thurles, they've had that knack of, even when they're not fully firing, to be able to get over the line. And when they, I think they were 10 points down again in the second half and pulled it back to 3, I believe, towards the finish. Another run of Maher goal. Was there worry creeping into Nina? Could you see the performance slipping a bit, or the nerves were as the finish line was kind of getting close?
I don't think it was nerves, I don't think it was Butler or anything. I mean, 10 minutes into the second half, Nina were 10 points up. And the game, actually, I'd say you'd have heard a pin drop for that few minutes. And just my wife and a couple of friends were with me, and they said, this is kind of over. And I said, no, the games like this don't peter out.
Yeah.
Number one, Thurles are champions. And number two, there's too many good players just to lie down. And Nina were well aware of that and kept going. But Thurles got their goal, which was inevitable. And then a couple of points, all of a sudden, there's a bit of momentum. They had the wind, and Shane Hennessy made a great save from, I'm fairly certain it was Rona Maher, that would have brought it to a point, I think, with about 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, from the result, and actually, I think that ball went wide, actually. He saved it, and it eventually went wide. But I think from a resultant puck out, Nina got a point and ended up tagging on three more. Now, I know Turles got a goal at the end, but it was effectively the last puck of the game. So Nina got a chance. Some teams, like Killer One last week, Turles got a goal the very last puck of the game. At least Nina got a chance to kind of steady the ship again and go again. I think it's great credit due to them that they were able to respond, and I think they scored 4 points after Turles got that goal, you know.
Sure, and on Turles, they've been great champions for Tip, going for the five in a row this year. What do you reckon? I mean, they've probably had a difficult route this year, a lot of games. What caught up with them in the finish, or was it just Nina were too good?
I don't think anything caught up. I think, in fairness to Turles, they've been remarkable champions. I suppose I think they themselves would be disappointed if they didn't put a club championship. That's something they're going to have to live with probably at this stage. I was thinking, I'm writing here as I'm talking, to Turles beat Nina in 2015, and their forward line that day included Billy McCarthy, who was injured this year, Dennis Maher, who's gone to full back, Lar Corbett, who was, in his pomp at the time, or just maybe coming to the end of his pomp, and Pat Burke, who would have been probably the best club hurler in Tipperary at the time. So three of those four were actually not starting yesterday, and Pat is probably in the twilight of his career. So you were dealing with a team that basically was missing their four main prongs of their attack from 4 years ago. So that may be doable in a county environment, but for a club, that's a huge hit to take in 3 years, four top-class players. So I don't think Turles lost anything in defeat yesterday. It's obvious all year they're not the powerhouse they have been, for no other reason other than fodder time has caught up with some of them in some regard. And as I said, Billy McCarthy's injury has been a huge loss to Turles. And I just actually want to say at this stage that I wish him the very best of luck. I believe it's a very serious injury. I hope to God, because I think he's a great player, I hope to God Billy gets back to full health for his sake, Turles' sake, Tip and Hurling's large sake. But, Nina Turles have looked to be ashamed, but I don't think anything has happened. It's just, look, everything has a natural cycle, and I think Turles have come to the end of their cycle. That's not to say they're gone anywhere, but they're certainly gone for this year, you know. But probably going to take a couple of years to put a team as formidable together again.
Sure. And what was the reaction around the town like last night, Michael? Is there a bit of a buzz?
Again, I'm here. We lost 99, we lost 07, we lost 13, we lost 15.
You're ready to add the second one after?
Wait, sorry?
You're ready to add the second county title final?
Yeah, I tell you, look, I grew up, Nina has, it was Ross Gray and Turles were the powerhouses of hurling when I was growing up, and Killer One, Ross Gray and Bursley here in the north, and Nina were very much bridesmaids. And it was kind of the team I was on, our team of the 90s, we kind of stepped up to the top table, and pretty much since 1990, which is 28 years at this stage, Nina have been genuine contenders almost every single year in the last, that's almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And we've won six semi-finals at this stage now and only one final, or seven semi-finals now and only one final out of six finals. So personally, I just got the feeling last night, I got a couple of phone calls, you're coming out, and I said no, I celebrated enough semi-finals. And I just met a couple of lads this morning, and it was the same thing. A couple of lads went out, and they just went home after a pint or two. That, you know, for Nina now, it's all for naught unless we go on and win the county final, and we've a formidable job to do. But we've just had too much heartache, and we've celebrated enough semi-finals. While there's delight, and I'm here in the shop this morning, and everybody's delighted. Everybody's fully aware that we've a battle on our hands. Far from in the bag. Absolutely far from in the bag.
Yeah. Did you see the other? Did you see the other semi?
I saw most of it. Yeah. I wasn't in for the start of it, but I saw most of it. And Clonalty and Tommy Barr, Clonalty are a peculiar team in so far as I just know this over the years. You go and look at Clonalty, and you never come away frightened or impressed.
Yeah.
But yet they're a typical country dogged team with a right good splattering of good, strong, forceful, determined hurlers. They don't look a whole pile, but we've always struggled to beat them. And they were exactly that yesterday, clinically efficient, almost like a German soccer team. They were clinically efficient, wasted very little ball, didn't look anywhere spectacular, but yet got the job done. And when Tommy Vara had a bit of a resurgence midway through the second half, again, it was just like click into the system, and you know, they pulled away again for a finish. So, but that's Clonalty, you know. To the un, the only issue that you might say, God, that there was no difference in the quality with the first and the second game. But by God, Nina will have to be as good, if not better, to beat Clonalty.
Now, our reporters were out in force at county championship games throughout the country over the course of the weekend. Michael Moynihan was down in Waterford, where he spoke with Ballygunner manager Fergal Hartley. And Fergal paid tribute to injured Waterford star Pádraig Mahony, who played a key role in their Waterford Senior Hurling Championship final win over Abbeyside, despite only being 70% fit.
Pádraig Mahony up to this morning might not play this game. Because Pádraig Mahony was injured. He had an issue with his back. Right up to this morning, right up to when we were in Bricky Rangers warming up, we didn't know whether Pádraig Mahony was going to play. And that's just a mark of the man that Pádraig Mahony is. And again, you know, that wouldn't have been seen there because nothing was said about it. But for Pádraig Mahony to go out and do what he did, you know, in a game that he probably shouldn't have played. To be honest, if this game wasn't on today, he wouldn't train for another 2 or 3 weeks. So he's a phenomenal character, and that's what Pádraig Mahony's about.
Here in Cork, it was a game of two halves between St Finbarr's and Carbery Rangers. Carbery Rangers manager Holly O'Sullivan couldn't explain his side's second half collapse, while Barr's Ray Keane admitted lifting the work rate was the only topic of discussion in their dressing room at half time. They spoke to Owen Cormacan.
We just stayed for a complete collapse.
Yeah.
Stopped playing all over the pitch. You know, when the Bears came at us, we'd be saying it was a spill. Let's say, like most Gaelic football games where offers didn't come again. Where offers just didn't come again for some reason.
Yeah.
It's extremely disappointing.
And, was it that they got on top at the middle and you couldn't get ball in? Or, you know, did you need to just slow it down a bit?
We were cleaned up midfield in the second half.
Yeah.
Or midfield and or half hour, then we're completely out of the game.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Bears got on top and we didn't break the momentum. And look, we've no one to blame on ourselves. We didn't perform. We left it go. You know, we can't legislate for the way we folded in the second half, to be honest.
Is there any danger, Holly, you think that he actually looked so on top that maybe that seeped out to the players and they were thinking this is easier than it actually should have been?
It was made very clear to them at half time that it was nil-nil again, basically, because we knew the Bears were a quality team and they were going to come.
Yeah.
So, look, again, as I said, you know. We'll think about it and see what else we could have done, but it's hard to put your finger on what went wrong, to be honest.
Was that something you had to talk about at half time, just to work around?
It was the only thing, really, to be honest with you, when you were after a performance like that, after playing with a fairly strong wind, it couldn't get any worse. So it was as simple as go at it, because, you know, if you didn't and you lost, you'd be regretting it, so there was no point. We'd nothing to lose, just go at it, and thankfully.
John Fogarty was in Tipperary, where Nina Éire Óg finally brought an end to Thurles Sarsfield's reign as Tipperary champions, though Nina manager John Fitzgerald still believes there is need to change the championship structure in the county.
Well, listen, it's a very difficult championship for club players. You know, like, you start in April, you have to go out for a few games, you have to come out of your group. So you can't not train, because if you're not out of your group, you can't be at the business end of the year. Then there's a huge lull throughout the summer period. It's probably something that needs to be looked at, because I don't think it benefited Tipperary either, if the truth be told. You had some players who were out there 7-8 weeks in a row. Can you sustain that? You probably can't. And no more than you can sustain April's performances the whole way through the championship. But listen, we're there after winning a tough battle today, and we're delighted to be there.
Stephen Barry was in Limerick, where Kilmallock manager John Bruder is looking ahead to a semi-final meeting with Na Piersaigh.
Yeah, listen, we're delighted to win. The main thing was to get over it and get into a semi-final against Na Piersaigh. You know, like, we know we have the tough side of the draw, but listen, we're going to have to play them at some stage throughout the year. They're the standard bearers in Limerick, but like, we relish a chance to take them down. Like,
you would have looked for a response after maybe a sluggish outing the last day. Probably happy you got it.
Actually, last it was brutal. Like, there's no two ways about it. And like, the lads know that they're realistic. We've played very well at times throughout the year, but we've had real lulls as well. And last Sunday or 2 Sundays, 3 weeks ago, there's another one completely like that. Like, it just flat all over the field. Like, we got the response today, but you'd expect us to be rude. Like, in reality, like, you know, like the way they went about it, I'm delighted. I'd be more delighted if we knew the same thing next Sunday. Like, yeah.
And turning our attention to Clare, where Ballyea and Cratlow booked their place in this month's Senior Hurling Final. Clare FM's Derek Lynch rounds up the weekend action for us.
In a game that produced more wides than scores, it was Cratlow who went to the well once more and came up with the answers to beat Kilmeny by 114 to 16 points. A swirling breeze in Cusick Park ensured both sides struggled with shooting, but the South East Claremen prevailed by the minimum to ensure they'll march behind the band for the first time since they were last crowned champions in their historic double year of 2014. Young star Rian Considine was the man who found the net once more, finishing off a well-worked move in the 39th minute en route to a personal tally of a goal and four. Cratlow boss Alan Neville was pleased to come through a tough test.
We knew that coming here today that unless we bought a huge steal that we wouldn't get to the final in 2 weeks' time.
It was a strange kind of a game. We had actually two scoreboards going at one stage, one for the scores and one for the wides. And we won't mention which one was ahead for most of the game, but yeah. Is that frustrating as a manager or was it just kind of down to the day?
Well, it depends who's given the wides. It can be very happy when you look at Kilmaley's wide count in the first half. I thought they had worked the ball through the lines extremely well into the wind. And I thought the wides they had contributed. Obviously, we went in 4 points up and we were delighted to win 4 points up. But it was an unusual wind. It's going from corner to corner. It wasn't going straight down the field. It looked that way, I suppose, to the neutral, but it's not the easiest wind to shoot in. So for that point, I suppose, the players can be forgiven a bit.
You've really kicked on, Alan, in this year from that Ballyhea game, and it's ironic, I suppose, that they're waiting again for you now, but there's a real sense of momentum about this journey.
Yeah, look at it. They'll say the same. I suppose both teams would have got a huge amount out of the game. Okay, we came out on the loser side of it, but you get a huge amount of encouragement from a game like that. You learn an awful lot about yourself, and sometimes in defeat you can even learn more. So look at, they've kicked on. They're an incredible group of players. Like, you know, to lose 7 or 8 players from an All-Ireland club final 2 years ago and to be able to do what they're doing now, I don't know if there's too many clubs in the county would be able to do that.
From your own point of view, and obviously the lads are probably thinking about Milton from this evening onwards, but you'll still have obviously both eyes fixed in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, look, I just spoke to the guys there now, and it's important to get the recovery session in tonight, and we'll sit down as a management team and we'll make a semi-plan, I suppose, if you like, in relation to where we want to go. But we can't put anything into concrete, obviously, until we see what players are available after next Sunday evening.
That's Cratlow manager Alan Neville there. Well, it's 2016 Munster champions Ballyhea, who were the first team into this year's decider after they got the better of a Doggett O'Callaghan's Mills challenge last evening. An incredible haul of 1-9 from play by Tony Kelly took the headlines as Kevin Sheehan's men marched into a second county final in the last 3 years. Niall Deasy was also in a scoring mood. He landed 7 over the course of the hour as they registered a 121-117 win. After the game, Sheehan told us it was a match that they were always prepared for a battle in.
Knew that they'd be good and tactically good and knew they're good off the goalie and he retains possession very well for them, and we knew we'd have to work hard and maybe take a couple of punches before we'd maybe squeeze into the game. But I think Jack got a bit of space at centre back. Tony started to motor well at midfield. DC was an outlet at full forward, and then when we got the goal, then the lads around them started to get to grips with that puck out. And once we got to grips with that, I felt at arm's length we were doing okay, but there was still danger there.
Yeah, because they had that threat obviously of Cooney and Lucknell and these fellas. You couldn't switch off for too long. But when push came to shove on the line, you seemed to make the right switches at the right time as well.
Yeah, look, I suppose sometimes you fall into it, and we're not regimental in the fact, like, if Gary thinks that the can possession be won at half forward, or thinks he could do it shoring up the half back line, or Ty can come out, or Tony drifts in, we just trust the lads to be working in the space they're in, and look at they do that quite well, and they're intelligent lads, and they don't get carried away and they don't lose the head, and we knew once we could get that scoreboard ticking out to maybe 4 points, we'd do okay, and I suppose a little bit of an experience with a goal chance there at the end, and could have just taken that point, and that would have got us to 4 points, and that would have nearly taken the sting out of it. But at 3 points, it's a dangerous lead.
Of course, there's not any team in the country probably has the star quality of the men that you have. That 190 his name today, I mean, that was just phenomenal return.
Yeah, and look, at when Tony comes back, it's not just the what you see here. Like you go back to the winter time there, he still pops his head in the gap when we're training. And you know, there was a Clare Cup game this year against Smith O'Brien's, and we needed those points early before the county lads went away. And we knew the county lads were working hard and he was stiff, but he spoke at half time and then dug out the second half. And we won a tight enough game that we needed. So Tony, it's training under 14s last year. Like Tony's an immense lad, but you're right. Like it's you take it for granted at times when it's 50-50, and next thing Tony hits 2 points out of nowhere, or filters through and gets a goal, or you know he talks well to the lads around him, keeps control. So you know, he's one of the best, you know.
Those two sides will go head-to-head in Cusick Park in 2 weeks' time, and it's the second time they'll clash this season, with Ballyhea prevailing after extra time when they met at the second round stage.
And that's it from this edition of Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner's GA Championship podcast. Our thanks to all our guests for joining us on the programme this morning, and also to Larry Ryan, who was responsible for production of the podcast. Don't forget, you can download us on iTunes, on SoundCloud, and on irishexaminer.com/papertalk.